HR wasn't viewed as a strategic function. So I knew that we had to modernize. I knew that we had to transform. And I knew that we had to do something quickly to build credibility to keep us transforming long term.
Hello and welcome to the Future Proof HR Podcast, where we explore the cutting edge trends shaping the future of HR, people operations, and the way we work. I'm your host, Thomas Kunjapu, founder and CEO of Cleary. Today, I am honored to welcome Angela Briggs Page, the Chief Human Resources Officer at Acelero. As the first true CHRO in the company's 25-year history, Angela has led a transformative journey to modernize HR and align people strategies with business goals, with a focus on leveraging data, rebranding HR, and equipping leaders with the tools to succeed. Angela is redefining what it means to be a world-class HR team in this very rapidly evolving workplace. So I am so glad to welcome you to the podcast. Welcome, Angela.
Thank you so much, Thomas. I'm so excited to be here.
Glad to have you. And let's talk about just that journey, because you said to me, and it really stood out, Acelero, it's not a new company. It's this organization has been around for 25 years. And yet you were relatively recently hired as the first CHRO. What led to that decision to actually bring you on board? And what have been your impressions and core focuses in HR as you've been looking to transform the organization?
That's such a good question. So I think it's about how do we create an organization that continues to be scalable, right? How are we using our biggest investment, our people, to drive business growth? And I always say, what got us here won't get us there. So as we think about the impact we want to have on children and preparing them for success, we really need a more expert in HR to help drive the business forward. So I stepped in this role knowing that this was going to be fun. We were going to see some results, but all aligned to, again, how do we drive business outcomes?
Maybe it's worth mentioning really quickly, what is the mission and the business that Acelero is in? Because you mentioned like students and outcomes there. Maybe it's worth just explaining that for folks.
Absolutely. We are about children, right? And preparing them to take advantage of their potential. So we focus on early childhood education, pre-K, to make sure that we're giving all kids an opportunity to be successful. What does that mean? And as a Head Start alumni myself, I really understood the benefit of going through Head Start. It helped make me who I am, giving me those fundamentals to move forward in this incredible space. So it's really about how we're setting kids up for success.
Within that context, you were hired into this organization. So what was your process when you got in on day one in the first few months? What did you set your eyes to look about for opportunities to improve things and to modernize things? What was your approach in the early days?
Stepping into this role, Thomas, I immediately saw the heart of the organization, and that's the people. Acelero is filled with people who are incredibly passionate about our mission and what we do. But what became apparent, especially in those first 90 days, was that while the commitment to impact was strong, our HR infrastructure had not evolved at the same pace as the rest of the organization. HR was literally seen as an administrative function, right? They focused on policies, they focused on compliance, they focused on transactions. I like to refer to them that we were order takers, right? Rather than a strategic force that could drive the business outcomes. So my first 90 days was really just about listening. So I started in September of 2023. So I wanted to take the rest of the year to just listen, right? I met with employees at all levels, gathering insights, wanted to hear about their experiences with the HR team. You know, I wanted to understand their challenges. So I asked three fundamental questions. What's working? What's broken? And what's missing? I also conducted a very thorough audit of our HR processes and our HR systems. And I confirmed we had some really big challenges. One, we had leadership gaps. HR wasn't viewed as a strategic function. Two, operational inefficiencies There were manual processes. There was duplication of effort. There was a lack of clarity on roles. We also had data integrity issues. Our HR data was fragmented, and that made decision-making incredibly difficult. And lastly, our HR debt was high. We had legacy processes, we had outdated systems, and inefficiencies that were built up over time. So I knew that we had to modernize. I knew that we had to transform. And I knew that we had to do something quickly to build credibility to keep us transforming long term.
So there's a lot we could dig into around like the solutioning, but even that problem statement that you came across, right? I want to dig into that a little bit because I'm almost getting obsessed with that lately, where there's this idea that HR teams, you said order takers, operationally driven, tactical is another way I've seen it, not seen as strategic, not seen as a partner or a key part like of the business. Now, is that related to the initial statement, just your hiring, which is there is a role for CHRO that actually is to escape that kind of treatment? Or is that a common thing that like you would see that a lot of organizations see HR in that way? And a lot of other leaders in many organizations see HR as being this administrative center, and that's really all they want from that. Or are you seeing that actually there's like universally all organizations need more from HR, but it's not that connection is not happening for some reason?
I think that now more than ever, and especially since COVID, what's needed from HR has changed. The requirement for HR teams, for people teams, has changed, right? I think that leadership, executive teams really recognize the impact that HR teams had as a result of COVID. Right? So we were able to step in, change the paradigm, change the narrative of what people thought of it about HR. Someone had to take the lead on making sure our people were safe. And that was chief HR officers, chief people officers. So we stepped into that gap, right? So now there is this need, this want, this mandate for more organizations to really want someone as a strategic business partner, a strategic enabler in this chief HR positions. Well, historically, not all companies felt like that, right? And it would be dismissive of me to say that all companies see it like that, because all don't, right? Every company is on its own journey, but ultimately, that is what we should be aspiring to.
Let's go back to some of the solutioning as you went through that process to actually transform the organization. It sounds like a lot of the policies and the focus was on talent development or employee engagement for the current employee base, or was there a similar demand on the talent acquisition side? Because those are the two sides of the coin usually, right, for orgs that you need to focus on.
Yeah, I think stepping in, historically, the HR department had really been about, how do we keep the lights on? How do we make sure the paperwork is signed? It's completed on time. We check the boxes. But it wasn't about how are we improving? How are we having business outcomes? How are we even understanding that our goals should be aligned to the business goals, right? So me coming in, one of the first things that I noticed as I completed my audit is that there were 400 openings at Acelero in January of 2024, right? And think about that, 400 openings, right? And we knew that every open position impacted our ability to deliver our mission. So as we talked about it, and I got feedback from our hiring managers, we got feedback from our candidates, I understood the existing hiring process was taking an average of 88 days from job posting to offer acceptance, which was way too long in such a competitive talent market. So we needed a radical overhaul, and we need to do it fast, right? So we took a multi-pronged approach. First, we examined every step of the hiring workflow, eliminating inefficiencies, reducing unnecessary approvals, and empowering hiring managers to move quickly. Second, we conducted monthly audits. We created job aids for consistency, because it was really important that everyone had a good experience when working with the talent acquisition team. That includes hiring managers. It also includes our candidates, right? What kind of experience were we giving them? Thirdly, we introduce standardized hiring pathways. And we also train the team on inclusive hiring processes. What does that look like? And how to manage their portfolios. How are they looking at each job that they're responsible for? And lastly, data became our secret weapon. We realigned our metrics. We redefined data dictionaries, which is a new concept for them, right? Because we wanted to make sure that everyone was aligned on our reporting. And we also had to make data more accessible and meaningful for decision making. So we were able to use real-time analytics to make data-driven decisions that sped up our hiring without compromising quality. The result, we cut our time to offer from 88 days to 29 days, ensuring that we filled roles faster while still hiring the best candidates. And at the beginning of 2025, January of this year, we had 59 openings as opposed to 400 in January of 2024. That's transformation.
So as you went through that process, what were the key unlocks to get you down? But that's a huge percentage saving in terms of open recs, assuming that there's the same kind of steady growth. How did you achieve that? Because it sounds like you said it's multi-pronged, also multi-stakeholder, and it involves data. Is there one anecdote that you can share about one particular tweak that helped you get there?
Yes, I will tell you a story. I was at a retreat and we had our senior leadership team at this retreat and we were talking about our hiring process. I was talking to another senior leader who had applied internally for a position and the hiring manager told me that they felt harmed going through our hiring process. And that was such a gut punch for me that I had to pause, but then I had to figure out why he felt like that. What were we doing? And if our internal customers, our employees, were feeling like that, what did that mean for external customers, our external candidates? So it really was drafting and documenting the process, understanding the bottlenecks, understanding how people were feeling through the process, right? So we didn't have a clear documentation of the process. So that meant our talent acquisition partners were not trained all the same way through the process. It really depended on who they were talking with to train them as they came into the organization. We didn't generate feedback from hiring managers, what their experience was, nor did we generate feedback from the candidates. What was their experience? So we really had to start doing that and doing that quickly, because we also had to understand that anytime a teacher is not in a classroom, then there are more children who are not afforded quality education so they can be successful. So it was really about, how do we do this? How do we put these existing resources to do this? How do we talk to and co-create with our hiring managers about what they need? How do we make offers quickly? We know that in a competitive talent market, people are not waiting for us to make an offer. So we just had to align all of that. So it literally took me probably about 6 months to get everything aligned so that we could show proof of concept of some of the things that we did in the organization. So it's not easy, but it's also being really intentional and deliberate about what we needed to do and being honest about where we were.
So it seems to me on the talent acquisition side, there's a bit of a funnel and some clarity in metrics, at least at a high level, around what is expected from an HR team. We need to hire qualified people and fast, right? As measured by open recs and time to fail and those kind of things. And the business impact is clear from there because it was done.
Absolutely.
But then everything that an HR team does for current employees any kind of programming at all can be a little bit more nebulous and is also an important part of aligning what you do to be strategically aligned with what the business needs. How do you ensure that everything that the HR team is doing after the moment of offer accept onwards, which is all about impacting the current employee base, how do you ensure that is not administrative and it feels strategic to all internal stakeholders?
I think that we have to think about the employee life cycle and how are we breaking that down? Because you can't accomplish everything in a year, right? So I'm always saying, what are those critical two or three things that I'm going to work on in a year so that we can separate that from the day-to-day, right? So what are those two or three wins? Mm-hmm. So when I think about talent acquisition, I think, how are we attracting people? How are we being the place people choose? So that's number one. So we focused on that. Second is, how do we continue to be the place people choose? So what does that look like in terms of their onboarding experience, right? And what do they need in terms of their onboarding experience? More importantly, we want them to know, this is who we are. This is our identity, right? These are our mission. These are our vision. These are our values, right? These are our behaviors aligned to our values. And we want you to add to our culture, but we want you to feel like this is a place where you belong. Because I think that everyone coming into an organization has to make that decision, right? Do I want to be here? Is this the place that I choose and why? So once we do that, then it really is, how do we teach them about who we are? How do we continue to envelop them into our culture, right? So that they can understand what's important to us. So it's understanding what they need to do as an employee and how they need to do it and how that's aligned with who we are as an organization. It's also, how are we continuing to get your feedback, right? The employee listening strategy is absolutely important. So yes, we hired you, but we can't forget about you. So how are we talking to you in the first 30 days? How are we asking those right questions? How are we in the beginning trying to understand, is this job, is what we said, what you're doing? If there's a disconnect, how do we change that? But how are we listening to you? So we have to make sure that we are checking in on them on regular points. So the team goes in and they checks in. They schedule 30-day check. The manager does 30-day check-ins. The people team does 60-day check-ins. Just want to check in, see how things are going. Do you have any questions? Is there anything else you need from us? But we're constantly making sure we hear the voice of our customers, and those are our employees, and that's important to us.
Taking that idea a little bit further, you talked about how you rebranded the HR team internally around what it is that you're doing to your stakeholders. I think you made the observation that you felt like it was seen as too much of an administrative function. How did you do that rebrand, and what did that really entail?
That's such a good question, Thomas. And it was really important because it wasn't just about the name change. It was really truly about redefining how employees experience HR. So we wanted to change us being an administrative function or people only coming to us when there's an issue. There's nothing worse than we can all talk about when you walk into a conference room or you walk in to an office and they say, oh my goodness, HR is here, right? So we had to change that perception entirely. So we transitioned from human resources to the people team. And that's because they really wanted to reflect our commitment to employees as individuals, not resources. So it wasn't just a cosmetic shift. Our messaging now centers on being proactive partners, right? How are we talking to you about your career development? How are we architecting workplace culture? How are we focused on your well-being? Whether it's mental, whether it's financial, whether it's social, right? How are we doing this instead of just the administrators of costs? So we really have been positioning the people team as a resource that employees can trust and turn to for support. We also changed our messaging externally, right? We wanted to amplify our employer brand making it clear that Acelero is a place where people can thrive. I think the impact has been powerful. This rebranding has strengthened our employee engagement. We saw a net 4-point increase in our employer net promoter score. It's made HR more accessible, and we're viewed as being solution focused. There's nothing more than coming to the HR department and hearing no, as opposed to how can I help you with that? I think our leadership team also has improved, right? As we think about our role as business enablers, helping to attract talent, helping to retain and develop employees, how we're fostering that thriving culture. Everything has improved because now we're seen as a resource, right? So it really has been important to our long-term value that we're offering to the organization.
So we talked a little bit about the messaging side and the intent of this rebrand and how it's really about taking an organization that has been, organization meaning the HR organization historically has been very administrative, and changing that out. A conflict or a tension I often see that happens in such transformations is that the current and existing HR team, as well as the organization, still has that existing or latent demand of the administrative items from the team. And the issue with the transformation is that there's just too much to do. Like, we still need to process the tickets. We still need to make sure the leave is processed and that performance review happens and questions get answered for employees. And now I've got to do all this other stuff on top of that. How am I possibly going to have enough time to make all this happen? How is that, or did that come up, or how would you address something like that if it hadn't there in particular?
I think that there was fear, right? Fear of change, because people were comfortable with what they were familiar with. And at the end of the day, they always seem to go back to what they're familiar with. So for me, it's okay. We're going to do that, but I'm going to redirect you back to where you should be focused. So one of the things that I did was I also had to change the people structure when I came into the organization, right? And that also included changing the roles, adding more clarity into the roles. We had new people leadership that was either within the organization, but some came externally into the organization, but it's also holding them accountable for your role and what you're doing now, right? A good example is we talked about the administrative work that we're doing. And I had a lot of HR generalists, HR directors who were comfortable with that instead of having conversations with our business leaders to understand what their goals were for the year. So it's always a question of, hey, I want to fill out this paperwork. And I said, that's great. Is that what you should be working on? Tell me about that. And then it forces them to say, yep, no, I need to go back and understand the business goals. So for me, it's patience to make sure that they don't fall back to what is comfortable, what they're comfortable with, but also upskilling and reskilling to make sure they understand what their roles should be now in helping drive the business forward. So for me, it's always, we're business people first, and we specialize in HR. So as a business leader, what should we be doing to ensure organizational success? So all of our conversations always come back around to, how are we ensuring business success? And I like to say, they always lead with policies. And that's great, because I want you to know what they are. But I also want you to step out and figure out, how can I help the business be successful? Because you already know the policy. Now, take what you know and figure out how we can make the business successful.
You know, that's so interesting, because I think taking one side of this debate that's been going on in my head, right? So as you see the age demand from the HR function kind of shifting, and then a lot of folks have done things a certain way and are really focused on being reactive and processing payroll or processing a process and ensuring that the trains are running exactly per the schedule, and the schedule doesn't change, right? Maybe yearly, right? is growth really organizationally, right? The one way to do it is to ensure that everyone is aware that as an HR generalist, as an HR manager or a director, your role is going to go from the administrative to the strategic, and it's going to go back and forth hour to hour, or at least day to day or week to week, depending on the particular task at hand. And you focus on upskilling, broadly speaking, the HR org to be able to think in both systems and to influence leadership while at the same time answering detailed policy questions or being responsive to a W-2 request that's off cycle. But a whole other approach could be to focus on specialization, where you can have some folks who actually thrive in operational capacities and in responsiveness focus on that, while you carve out a different type of role where it's really hard for 0% of your time to be administrative or a little bit reactive, I would think. But the vast majority of it is carved out in a way to those specialists who thrive in that kind of functionality. That's a potentially different approach, right, in terms of how you could lead or evolve your org. How do you think about that?
I have both, right? So I have my people operational services team, and within that team is the people connect team, right? So they are the first response to frontline questions. They also do benefits, they do compensation, they do leave requests. They are our operational efficiency. That's my chief HR operations officer leads that team. And that's where most of the administrative work goes. Then we have our people strategic partners who focus on the strategy, aligning with the business, really become the leader of HR in their assigned client groups, right? And making sure they understand what that means, making sure they understand what that business needs from them as the HR leader for that business. So I have both, and you're absolutely right, because we want to make sure that we also have career paths for our people team members. So they may start in the posting people operational services and grow through that. And they may figure out that they want to specialize and stay over there. And that's fine. I want that, right? I want you to be excited about what you do. But I also want to give you the opportunity to move to other areas. So if you like the people success team and you want to figure out how we can better develop our talent, right? What does leadership development look like? Right? What does career development look like? What does succession planning look like? What does talent acquisition look like? You may want to come over here and figure out how are we attracting talent. Mm-hmm. But being able to offer those career paths helps with retention, right? Because we want to make sure that our people feel like they're being developed, whether it's inside the people team, in other areas of the team, or even outside of the organization.
That's fascinating that you feel like you can offer both paths for folks. And actually, I'd like to take that opportunity to ask a broader question about HR orgs in general for the future. You've talked about how post-COVID, the demand for the kinds of things that are needed from a people team of the future keeps evolving fast, and it's shifted. New skill sets emerge, new asks are made. And so given where we are right now, how would you think about the future HR organization that is responsive to the demands of a future organization?
I think this is where we really have to have more focus on skills, how you're developing your internal talent marketplace. Because for me, it's really about the skills. I don't think job titles are that important. What skills do you have? Right? And how do we take advantage of your skills to be successful? So I think even as HR organizations, we have to start thinking about the skills that are needed, right? How do we make sure that we're agile? How do we make sure that we are leading through influence, right? How do we make sure that you understand finance, you understand operations, right? Because you really do have to be a business leader. We have to make sure that we have a repository of your skills so that we can take advantage of you. And it also leads with retention. So if we have an internal talent marketplace that lists those skills, there are positions that are in there that can help with your skill development, right? So that you're learning while you're part of our organization instead of having to go outside of our organization for additional skills. So for me, the future is about skills. How are we inventorying them? How are we utilizing them? How are we hiring? How are we promoting? It's about the skills that you have And we have to be able to help people understand the skills they have, right? For me, when you ask people about their job, yes, you're a customer service rep, but what skills do you have, right? You were a stay-at-home mom for 5 years. What skills do you have, right? I know you have really good time management skills. We know you have really good customer service, right? We know that you're very adaptable. But one of the things that we have to think about is how are we getting people to understand those skills as individuals, and how as an organization, we understand the skills they have so we can better utilize them.
Yeah, so that seems to apply both to skills within HR, but really I think you're talking about more broadly about just skills in the overall labor market or for the employee base. And it goes back to the earlier story you mentioned about someone who was applying for an internal job and actually felt not great going through the process. But to be clear, it's amazing that you can apply for an internal job and it's an open possibility, because I think a lot of organizations actually make it more difficult to find a new job internally than to just get a new job externally. That's a key piece, or just that mobility, because the skills that are in demand will evolve, it seems like, faster. There are skills 2 years from now that aren't even on the roadmap or just people aren't aware of, like today, and being able to be responsive to that and helping the organization be responsive to that is what I think I'm hearing is just a key outcome that a great HR team of the future can drive. And I heard agility there. The agility part, I think, maps to both, right? To both being agile within skills as an HR team, but also to enable that within the entire org across your customers.
Yeah, because what I think is our skills are transferable. We have to have business skills. So we have to learn how to read a P&L. We have to understand how the business operates, right? Yes, when you're coming in and you're probably entry level, you're learning more about employee laws, right? But at the end of the day, they're business skills, right? And so that's whether you're HR, whether you're IT, whether you're finance, to be successful, you have to understand how the business operates. So I always think about, yes, there are HR skills, right? Yes, I want to understand FMLA, and there are people who specialize in that, right? But ultimately, I want to understand how we are impacting business outcomes, right? From a people perspective. So I always tell everyone, what keeps me up at night is how we're thinking about our people in business decisions. So that's what's important. I think they're business gigs.
As you say that, I think if you're giving advice to someone, I'd love to pose this question to you, who's like a friend, son, or daughter is considering getting into HR as a first role. It sounds like one of the things you might tell them to do is, hey, maybe learn how to read a P&L statement. It sounds like maybe advice that you're giving in terms of preparing for any kind of like HR role. So how would you answer that more broadly? I'm curious, Angela, just new person coming into the labor market, considering going into this particular career, and obviously looking to the future as a place of job satisfaction and growth, what would you advise them?
Thomas, I love this question. And I love this question because it happens to me all the time, right? And the first thing is, people tell me they want to get into HR because they love people. I said, great. Have you ever considered social work? In HR, it's more than about people, right? It's an understanding how people are impacted by business decisions. So one of the things that I always do to my teams is, especially back in the day when the Wall Street Journal was in paper, and I would pick an article and we would have to read the article as a team and understand the people impact of what was happening with that business, right? Because it's not about I like people. Right? Because you have to make hard decisions in HR about the people. So it's about thinking about the people and how business decisions impact the people. So it's about, yes, great, I want you to get in HR, but let's talk more about what that means. That means that you want to make sure that you're hiring the right people. You want to make sure that you are promoting the right people, right? We want to make sure that there is a strong rewards and recognition program for our people, so that they continue to want to be here. It's really about, how do we ask additional questions to really figure out what excites them? But it can't be about, I just like people.
So Is that an observation you made as you became an experienced person in this space? Or was that something you learned along the way? Or would you consider yourself, when you were back in the day, in that same bucket with that attitude? And more broadly, are there any other things that are counterintuitive to you, right? Where if you're talking to yourself when you were getting into the function back in the day that you did not foresee and that you had to learn, if not the hard way, at least through experience?
I had to learn the hard way. So just a little bit about my background. I always knew, you could not have told me differently, that I was not going to be a doctor, right? So I took Latin for 4 years in high school. I minored in classical languages because I had Latin and I needed that for the MCAT. When I first went to school, it was a biology major, and you could not have told me that I was not going to be a doctor. So like many people, HR chose me. So I had a work study opportunity with the dean at my university, and she was an administrative dean. I got to sit with her and understand what HR was at a very entry level. And that kind of changed my trajectory and my career path. But even then, I didn't know what HR truly was or the value HR truly could have in an organization. So I'll never forget, as I was growing through my own HR career journey, I was offered a position with a professional sports organization. And we're talking about what we need to do from the HR team. And we would barter tickets to get supplies. And I was like, oh, I think that was my first moment. I was like, oh, no, I can't do this. This is not what I'm good at. So I was like, no, that's not going to work. And I was probably there about 6 weeks. It wasn't good. What they sold was not what I bought. But it made me think about, what do I want to do? It made me think about, how do I change my thought process about HR? And so I started thinking about HR differently. And I think that one of the best compliments that I ever got was when I was the chief people officer at Pop Healthcare and the CEO, who had worked with larger organizations. And I had to grow that HR team from scratch. We had 87 employees when I started, to thousands when I wound up leaving. But he was like, you are the best HR person that I've ever worked with. And that was important to me because I understood the business. And it was because of that, more things were added to my portfolio. So it just wasn't HR, right? It was also how to handle compliance and credentialing, and other things were added to my plate because I understood the business. So I was able to grow the HR team along with the business, with the idea that, yes, we want to care about the people and we're leading with empathy, but we also want to make sure our people know how we grow the business. We need to make sure our people know the business outcomes we should be focusing on. And what does that look like? So it changed how we communicate, what's needed, even from a performance perspective, right? What does that mean? What are your goals that align to our bigger wigs or our bigger strategic imperatives to drive the business forward? How are we all making sure that we all are speaking with one voice? That changed me and my philosophy about HR.
It's clearly, because that's been a theme I've definitely heard throughout our conversation about being conversant in the business and being able to speak that language with your stakeholders and fellow leaders in the organization. Okay, at this point, Andrew, I'd like to ask you, are you ready for our lightning round of questions where I'm going to hit you fast and furious with a couple of different questions to get your quick thoughts, 30 seconds or less?
Let's go.
Okay, what's the best piece of career advice you ever received?
Don't wait for permission. Ask for forgiveness.
Okay. Break things. Let's talk about like HR again. That's an HR trend you think that's going to dominate the conversation over the next decade?
Skills first hiring. We need to be focused on skills. What are the skills people need to get the job done? I don't think job titles are going to matter as much as what skills someone has.
And I wonder if it's also the credentialing and traditional education can also be upturned a little bit and moved more towards skills-based trainings.
I'm a huge believer in that. Most of us get our skills through on-the-job training. That's where most of us get our skills. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to be a degree, but it's not either or. It's both and in terms of how do you recognize the skills.
So if you could wave a magic wand and change something about the way that HR and people teams work across the world, what would you change?
I would change performance management. We have to reimagine performance management, and we have to get rid of annual outdated performance reviews. How are we focused on real-time, meaningful, continuous feedback?
Got it. Okay. We talked a lot about the reactive nature, the administrative nature of HR often. What is one such task that if you could wish that you could just not have to deal with, or anyone on your team would not have to deal with anymore? You could magically automate away with software or AI. What comes to mind?
Oh, that's such a good question. I think employee engagement, sentiment, right? How are we capturing that quicker so that there's no delay? There's nothing worse than taking an engagement survey or pulse survey or a one question survey and then you have to wait. I think we need to figure out how can we speed that up so we can catch issues faster?
Got it. I guess on a personal note, if you could have dinner with one historical figure, who would it be?
Maya Angelou. I think that I read her book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, probably when I was about 12 or 13. And she said something that has always stuck with me. I hope for the best, I prepare for the worst, and I can take anything in between.
Wow, that's as good a note as any, I think, to end on then. Thank you so much for your time, Angela. So that's a wrap for today's episode of Future Proof HR Podcast. Huge thank you again to Angela for sharing the transformation, both in your career, as well as what you have done recently at Acelero. And of course, let's stay focused on how we can align what we're doing in HR with what's going on in the business. So thank you so much, Angela, and for everyone out there. Until next time, keep future-proofing your organizations. Bye now. Hey, it's Thomas again. One quick question before you go. Are you and your HR team tired of answering the same employee questions again and again in Slack? If yes, our Cleary AI-powered Slack bot is here to help. It takes routine employee requests and answers it automatically while freeing up time for you to take on more important tasks. At the same time, it automatically builds up an HR knowledge base as you go. It's quick to set up, works right in Slack, and you can try it for free. Just head on over to gocleary.com/HR-chatbot to install it. It's again, gocleary.com/HR-chatbot. Thanks again.